Cranford by Elizabeth Gaskell. Preface by Lady Anne Thackeray Ritchie. Part 1. My father has written of the memories connected with the writing of books, and of the scenes and feelings which are printed on the pages, quite other from those which they recount. And there are also the associations of the readers, as well as of the writers. One scene in Cranford always comes back to me, not only for its own most pathetic value, but because I saw my father reading it. I can still remember him coming through the doorway just as I had finished the chapter, when, not without some agitation and excitement, I put the close-printed number of Household Words into his hand. It was in the little dining-room of his house in Young Street, by gaslight, just before dinner-time. The story was that of Captain Brown, and he sat down and read it then and there, and afterwards told me the writer's name. But indeed, I did not think of it as a story at all. It seemed to me rather that I had witnessed some most touching and heroic deed, some sad disaster, and though I was a grown girl at the time, I had a foolish, childish wish for my father's sympathy, and a feeling that even yet he might avert the catastrophe. Dear Captain Brown, in his shabby wig and faded coat, loved and remembered far beyond the narrow boundaries of Cranford, the city of the Amazons, the home of Miss Pole and Miss Matty and Miss Jenkins, the place where economy was always elegant, where, though some might be poor, we were all aristocratic. Ever since the winter's evening when I made my first acquaintance with that delightful place, it has seemed to me something of a visionary country home, which I have visited at intervals all my life long, in spirit, for refreshment and change of scene. I have been there in good company. Thank you for your letter, Charlotte Bronte writes to Mrs. Gaskell in 1853. It was as pleasant as a quiet chat, as welcome as spring showers, as reviving as a friend's visit. In short, it was very like a page of Cranford. The quotation breaks off with little dots, but I am sure that each of them represents a happy moment for Currer Bell, who had not many such in her sad life. There is a most interesting notice of Mrs. Gaskell in the Biographical Dictionary, in which Lord Houghton is quoted as writing of Cranford as the finest piece of humoristic description that has been added to British literature since Charles Lamb. I had been thinking of Eliah after re-reading the book, and I was pleased to find myself on the steps of such a critic as Lord Houghton. One could imagine Mrs. Sarah Battle and the poor relation dwelling in Cranford, and if Charles Lamb could have liked anything that was not London, he too might have fancied the place. Perhaps Miss Austen's ladies may also have visited there, but I feel less certainty about them. They belong to a different condition of things, to a more lively, love-making set of people, both younger in age and older in generation than the Cranford ladies. Cranford is further removed from the world, and yet more attuned to its larger interests than Meryton, or Kellynch, or Hartfield. Drumble, the great noisy manufacturing town, is its metropolis, not Bath with its succession of card parties and assembly rooms. At Cranford, love is a memory rather than a present emotion. The sentimental locks of hair have turned to grey, the billet doux to yellow, like autumn leaves falling from the tree of life. But there is more of real feeling in these few signs of what was once than in all the Mrs. Bennet's youthful romances put together. Only Miss Austen's very sweetest heroines, including her own irresistible dark-eyed self, in her big cap and folded kerchief, are worthy of the old place. I should give the freedom of Cranford, were it mine to bestow, in the usual handsome casket, to Anne Elliot, to Fanny Price, perhaps.